Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome back, Chatterboxers, to another fine week of the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara.
And so we do this video game industry radio show called Chatterbox. And you can go to our website, chatterboxgameshow.com, to learn a little bit more about it or to chat with us live during the show. Usually it's more like chat with other listeners since we're kind of busy doing a show. But, you know, one of these days we'll have Rich back and he'll be able to monitor the chat and tell us what's going on, too.
I wait with bated breath for Rich to
In the meantime, return. During the commercial breaks, I'll certainly look. Of course, if you want to call us and chat live, feel free to do so. 866-536-1100 is the number to call if you are listening live. If you're listening over a podcast, that is great, too. You may recall from last week's episode, we announced a big contest along with All Games Interactive or All Games Network.
How's that going?
Well, actually, I haven't talked to the All Games guys this past week.
It must be because they're so busy being inundated with entry after entry.
Perhaps. Or I have a feeling people are just getting theirs ready. We certainly haven't gotten a lot of submissions. So if you do send yours in to Chatterbox, because each of their shows, you know, there's going to be a winner from each show that goes on to the final contest bit for the Grand Theft Auto 4 themed Xbox 360. So anyway, submit them to us. This is what I'm trying to get at. Just remind people about it. So we've got this contest with All Games. You can win a 360 Elite Grand Theft Auto 4, like painted or etched or magically holographed onto it. I don't really know. But it's a cool prize. And we're certainly participating. So if you email me, Alon@chatterboxgameshow.com, with an attached MP3 file, you know, a parody or something themed, game-like, something about Chatterbox, whatever. We'll send it along and, we'll send along our favorite.
Tell us how much you like us.
Yeah, I mean,
or hate us.
Well, here's the thing. We're supposed to do voting for the best one on the forums at All Games.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you and I could just decide if you want.
I usually like being the arbiter of what is good and bad.
I kind of did tell people that it would be voted on, so maybe we'll do that. But really, we got to get enough submissions, and so far we haven't got enough. So, anyway, send them along to us. That would be great. And, anyway, that's all I'll say about it. Last week, we had way too much time devoted to this new contest, but
yeah. So I heard that a new game just came out.
Why, yes, sir. The game we just mentioned as part of our contest.
And funny thing about this, I was driving around last night. It was what? I guess it was like 11:30. Okay.
I want to talk about this quite a bit as well. Not necessarily the lines, but
yeah.
You know, I want to talk a lot about
so
the game.
I drive by this Best Buy at 11:30, and there's like a bunch of hooligans hanging out around the Best Buy. And so I'm saying to myself, what are these people doing hanging out at Best Buy? You know, there's a bunch of teenagers or whatever.
Didn't even launch, dude.
Didn't even dawn on me that it was a game launch, much less GTA 4.
Okay.
I looked at the group, and there were at least two females, and so I quickly deduced, clearly, this is not a video game launch line.
Okay.
Not only because
it must be a CD release party.
Because there were females present, but because there were just like, I don't know, like six or seven people hanging around. You know, I just thought that, you know, maybe they're going to do a reenactment of like West Side Story or something.
All right.
So, you know, I just drove by thinking nothing of it. And then, you know, oh yeah, I realized later, yeah, GTA 4 just came out.
You know, actually, that's a really interesting idea for a scene in Grand Theft Auto 4. Driving around, perhaps, you know how they do it in different time periods, the different versions of the games? I'd like to have one back in the 60s, where they have gangs walking around, breaking out into song, snapping fingers.
The musical version.
Yeah.
I think that would be totally,
you know,
sweet.
The Jets versus the Sharks.
That could be like a mod or something, you know? Like, it's instead of like wireframe mode or big head mode, you could have like musical mode.
Grand Theft Auto, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
There you go.
That would be awesome.
So, as you know, I'm very stock-minded with a lot of these video game companies.
Stock minded?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Like, I'm minding the stocks.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So I was watching the ticker, right? And interesting thing, as you know, there's this buyout offer for Take Two.
EA has been trying to buy Take Two.
Yeah, it was like $26, and
they said it has to be done by mid-April because the game's coming out at the end of the month, and we want to own you before then.
Yeah, and they extended the offer, so much for that. So it's still going. They actually reduced it to like $25.75 or something, because of some kind of technicality. Anyway, stock went up. Guess how much it went up, Alon?
I don't know, sir.
40 cents. Whopping 40 cents. 26.60.
I actually read something about how it went up quite a bit.
Well, for about a minute, it went up like a dollar, or almost a dollar, and then it went back down. So
it looks like EA had a really good price in mind.
So stock manipulation is alive and well. Actually, I started thinking about this because, as you can imagine, there's a bunch of analysts weighing in on this, and EA is issuing their press releases and such, and basically they're saying, oh, look, the stock price hardly went up. This is clearly indicative of the fact that, our offer was actually a really good offer, and they should take it, and we should own, what is approaching the great majority of stock space of the entire game industry, apparently. Right?
All right. So, are you saying that...
But here's the funny thing.
It's not really worth just that much?
Well, here's the funny thing is that if you guys remember something that we were talking about a few weeks ago, there was something really interesting happened around the time when this tender offer was announced. And there was a whole bunch of people who were in Take-Two, invested in Take-Two for the long term, basically got out, and they kind of got replaced by a whole bunch of short-term investors, right? So short-term investors who, don't care about Take-Two, really. They just care about, oh, look, there's some action going on here. I'm going to throw my hat into the ring. Right?
All right.
So if that's...
I don't know if all of our listeners understand the ideas of short-term, long-term investment, the benefits,
I'll just assume they do.
All right. Let's just say...
I like to think people are smarter rather than stupider.
Short-term is high risk and generally just a gamble.
Yeah. They're just look, there's action here. I want to be where the action is. They might not know anything about Take-Two or about video games or about the industry or a part of the industry or anything like that.
That's a good enough explanation for me.
Anyway.
For the short term.
So if this is true, right, then most of the people who own Take-Two stock now, right, are invested in it for the short term and consequently may not care or know or understand the value or the depth or whatever of this release. So I think one of two things will happen. Either... obviously only one of two things can happen, right? Either they buy it or they don't. Either the takeover works or it doesn't.
Yeah, it goes up, goes down.
But I'm wondering if, the actual depth of the financial impact of the game is actually going to take a few more days to kind of play out, right? Because it just came out.
Today, in fact.
Today. So I'm wondering if there's a lot more action coming up. Or I'm wondering if, maybe it will just fizzle out.
I'm wondering if anyone cares, really.
I'm not Jim Cramer. I'm not going to make ridiculous authoritative claims while screaming into the microphone.
I can tell you that Activision is up higher than I've seen it before. I've been following it every day, but it's up 27 now.
That's good times.
Apparently worth more than Take-Two.
I got some Activision.
Me too, man.
Yeah.
All right, so moving along to more interesting topics. I did want to talk about Grand Theft Auto, right? So there's a whole lot that can be said from... or that we can discuss based on my thus far short-lived experience with the game. So,
and I haven't played the game, just in the interest of full disclosure.
Well, so really the only one I've ever played, the only modern version of Grand Theft Auto that I've played extensively was Grand Theft Auto 3. And when I say extensively, I mean more than 2 minutes.
Right. So you played it for 10 minutes?
No, I probably put a few hours in, but
right on.
If for anyone who's played that game, they realize that playing for a few hours doesn't really get you far through the story because you just mess around. Most of the time, you're not really doing what, the game was built to do in terms of storyline.
Lots of distractions.
Yeah. So anyway, I've had a little bit of time, maybe an hour and a half, with Grand Theft Auto 4, because of course my roommate got it last night, brought it home, and played it before I went to bed. So I want to talk more about that, and then a few other concepts that it brings to mind based on that experience, because, like I said, a whole lot of thoughts.
Like the BS in game journalism.
That's another one of them. We'll be right back after the break.
You're listening to Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
And I am Alon.
And every week we talk about video games. And this week, what's the game we're talking about?
About Grand Theft Auto 4.
Gran Turismo?
Four. Yes.
No, Grand not Grand Theater? No. No, no, Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto. Before we do that, I got to mention now our wonderful sponsor, the University of Advancing Technology. You can view their website at uat.edu. I happened to go there myself. Even finished. Got a radio show. And now I'm here talking to you every week.
This is what happens when you go to that school.
So,
and you're swimming in money. you're lining your collar with dollar bills because you just can't think of any better use.
Well, I'm a happy gentleman. Anyway, we're talking about Grand Theft Auto 4, of course. I don't like to be one of the bunch because I know everyone's talking about it, but I obviously want to discuss my experience and then what it's led me to think about. And so last night, Johnny comes home. He's got Grand Theft Auto. He actually bought two copies so we can play multiplayer. And I played multiplayer, by the way. But
he's a nice guy, this Johnny.
He is. Well, I mean, I got to buy my own, right? But
oh, he made you pay for it.
Oh, well, yeah.
Oh, he's still kind of nice.
I slap it on the business Chatterbox account, so it's taken care of.
Good times.
So anyway, I did play Deathmatch, just while I'm on the topic. But I only there's like a million different types, and I only played the one that was all human, no cars.
Okay, there's Deathmatch and Grand Theft Auto.
There's multiplayer, yeah.
All right.
So, and that particular multiplayer was kind of weak.
Now I'm curious. Now I'm a little curious.
So what I played was the Deathmatch. It was just human beings, and it was weak because it had basically the camera is still dynamic, even though it's a Deathmatch situation. And okay. I don't know if you can envision that, not having experienced it before.
I'm trying to envision how it would not suck.
Imagine you're trying to aim at someone, and your camera keeps turning when you don't want it to.
Yeah, that's not good times.
Yeah, that's annoying. That's what happens in a third-person game when you have a very active camera. But anyway, that's...
Perhaps an overactive camera.
Yeah, that part was annoying. But in general, I can see why the game is very attractive to people. Like, number three was awesome, but it got boring really, really fast. And playing the fourth one, it was also awesome. Like, my complaints about the other ones are relieved. Like, it's got higher resolution graphics, and it's got faster frame rate, which are my main issues with the other one. Just playing it was frustrating because I just don't like looking at a jittery screen the whole time and looking at this environment that is very like lush in terms of the availability of options.
Right, and as you know, I'm always frustrated with this fantastic ability of developers in general to, no matter how good the hardware gets, they manage to find ways to bring it to a crawl and not care.
What are you saying?
But I digress. No matter how good the hardware gets, they always put enough crap in it.
It's always sucking.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
To reduce the frame rate to just above tolerable levels.
Yeah. Dude, that's why back in the PlayStation days, the original PlayStation, Tobal No. 2, do you remember playing that game?
Yes.
Dude, that game ran beautifully.
You know, I don't mean to be racist, but I guess I'm going to have to be. You don't see that in a lot of Japanese games.
You don't see what?
You don't see this, let's splatter graphics all over the screen until the frame rate's like just under 20 or something.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, they do a better job.
The Japanese do seem to be a lot better at saying, you know what, frame rate's really important, and we're going to make our game run at 60 frames a second and stick to that.
Well, for the time, I bring up Tobal 2 because it looked fantastic. It played wonderfully. It had all sorts of extra features in the game that you wouldn't normally expect from a fighting game. And it ran at, I mean, I don't know if then if it was 30 or 60, but it's all the same to me as long as it's not below 30. It ran with many frames a second.
The point is it feels nice and smooth.
Yeah.
And it's responsive, and that makes you feel all warm inside.
Exactly. And it's not so much that I care about the graphics, but the frame rate's really important because it affects your control of the game.
Absolutely.
And as I've said over and over and over, control is the number one most vital aspect of your gaming experience.
Right. But not what you see in screenshots, and most of the time they're hawking screenshots.
Well, yeah. I mean, because what you see in a screenshot doesn't represent how you're controlling it. And no matter how good it looks, if you can't control what you want to do,
right,
it doesn't matter.
But we digress.
Anyway, Grand Theft Auto 4 has a lot of this resolved, although the control is still... When you're walking around, the combat could be way better. You press buttons a lot, and not always when you press a button does something actually happen. That's frustrating to me. But I understand it's not Street Fighter. You can't press the button 30 times a second and have them actually punch 30 times a second. But still.
Well, you could, but...
it wouldn't be as realistic as they want it to be. The
but
driving,
they
can't. Though, the, and I don't know enough about cars. You do. Maybe you could tell me
what's
when
up?
You get a chance to play it. But, like, it's really hard to turn in those cars.
And
I don't think I'm going 80 miles an hour.
I've read the same thing.
Yeah, the controls could be tighter.
This was one of my main criticisms, actually, of the Grand Theft Auto games in general, is that I just never felt like I was halfway competent at even steering. And I think that's one of the most fundamental things in the game, is that the basic mechanics of the game, a player has to feel competent at doing. Yeah.
Part of me thinks they might have done it on purpose, so that you run into stuff and it just feels more manic.
They very well may have, or they just maybe just threw in, oh, look, you can drive now, and then they stopped caring about that.
No, it's clear to me that they put a lot of effort into the driving. Like, it seems very polished in many ways.
So you're saying it's polished, and yet you still don't feel like you're in control?
Yes.
Okay, that's
strange,
very interesting.
Strange, huh? I feel like I'm always driving a drunk character, but I can tell that the physics are very well done, right? You got
to
play it.
Yeah, I'm
going
to have
man.
To check that out to say anything.
I mean, it's just that there's too much sliding going on. You know, it's like when you have a game that has drifting in it and it accentuates the drifting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And other games don't accentuate the drifting. Well, you know, what is more realistic? What is better? It's hard to tell. Anyway, so it's a little bit hard to control. And I do say control is really important, but there's still a lot you can do. Everywhere you can go, the city's huge. There's so much going on. And this is more of what I wanted to talk about, because I look at a game like Grand Theft Auto, in this case, number 4, right? And even though it's very similar to games I've played in the past, I haven't played it long enough to see if it shines in ways that are unlike the previous ones. And really, I didn't even play San Andreas or whatever the one after. The one in the 80s. I don't even remember what it's called.
Vice City.
That's the one.
Yeah.
There you go. So I don't know how it differs from the previous one, aside from the obvious multiplayer aspect of the game.
Right, right.
But there's probably something. But the point is that the game is very, very polished. And so I wanted to talk to you, of course, as a game designer, and see, like, one thing that separates good games from bad games, or games that keep an interest, or games that wow people, right? It's all this extra crap that happens. For instance, you know, you steal cars all the time, obviously. In a game called Grand Theft Auto, you're going to be stealing cars.
Sure.
You might steal a car that has a passenger in it, other than, obviously, the driver. So you start driving around, and you get to a point where your car slowed down in traffic or whatever, your passenger might, you know, open the door, jump out and scream, right? Running away, being all pissed off. And it's...
If she's a little girl.
He or she or whomever. Right? But my point is, like, first of all...
Does the passenger get pissed and, like, try to punch you out if it's a big burly guy?
I haven't seen them get in a fight with you in the car, but I don't know that it doesn't happen. But the point is, like, it's not just... They didn't just decide that every car driving around is going to have just one person in it and you pull them out.
Right, right, right.
Right? Some might have passengers, and certainly taxis are more likely to have passengers in them. Beyond that, the passenger doesn't just stay in there while you drive around and maybe have some sound effects about being scared and pissed off. No, like, they'll actually take action, and they will act in a somewhat realistic way, you know, given the environment. The fact that it's a video game, they're not going to be super realistic.
Right.
But they'll decide they want to get out and run away, and there'll be some amount of dialogue from them, which... You know, I haven't heard a lot of repeated dialogue in the game, too, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So it's polished like that. There's things going on everywhere. Obviously, people walking around because they want you to hit people. But there's just, you know, there's ramps really all over the place. All these different jumps that you can take with your cars just to have fun, right?
Right.
I think one of the little meta games is to find all the ramps in the city and jump off of them. And as soon as you jump off, like, it goes into slow-mo automatically, and then you can control the speed of the slow motion, whether it's slow or actually not very slow. You can put it at any time when you're driving around your car, you can go into the cinema mode of driving, and you can put it into slow motion when you're driving around in cinema mode. It's just stuff like that that, like, I wouldn't have thought of. But the designers decided they've got this game, they've got this idea for what could be an interesting game, and they've built all the mechanics to it. Now let's sit around for, like, another 6 months or another year and come up with just all these little things we can add to make it really pop. You know, way better than it might be if someone's just copying us, right? And so you take these other games that just copy good games, like Grand Theft Auto was copied left and right, and Super Mario's copied left and right. Nobody ever does a good job. And
usually.
It's pretty rare.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I love Mario games. Jak and Daxter was the first platformer in years, or 3D platform platformer that I actually like played through and liked and didn't think that it really failed in too many ways.
Yeah, I thought that one sucked too. Yeah. Well, anyway, continue.
It wasn't as good as the Mario games in my opinion, but it was really close. I really enjoyed it. I didn't play 2 or 3, but it was a good game, and it did a lot of things right. So then I look at all these copycat games that are out there, and it's like, is it the polish that's missing? Is that the aspect?
You're asking, like, why do they suck so bad? Why can't they do the same thing? Why can't they be as good, right?
Well, I'm just taking note. This is one thing that amazed me, and I'm starting to realize maybe that's what it is that separates the true gem from the copycat.
Well, I think I'll have a few things to say about that when we come back.
And we will be back.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woo-hoo!
And we're back. Chatterbox Video Game Radio with Alon and...
And Aura!
And so we were talking about Grand Theft Auto. We got a couple callers here. We got our usual Penn and Fopo on the line, but want to keep them on hold for a bit. I was basically saying that Grand Theft Auto 4, it does a really good job, and all of the recent Grand Theft Auto games do a great job of having a lot of polish, a lot of extra content, just making the world seem real, even though obviously it's horribly far from real because it's
right.
Virtual and
well, that's,
you know, they can't recreate
like
everything.
Well, that's been GTA's thing, hasn't it?
Yeah, to make it like you can go anywhere or do anything. You still can't really go in every building and stuff, but just the little things that I wouldn't have expected, the way people respond to your being there.
Yeah.
And it really makes it feel more realistic. And I was thinking about other games. Like, in general, when you have a good game copied by some other game, you look at that other game and it's... And I always... Anytime I'm discussing game design, I use Mario as my example. Mario 64, your guy can...
It's probably the best example, because that game sold, like, what? Like, tens of millions of units.
Sold a lot, that's for sure. It was also there on opening day for a console, right? But the Mario character can tiptoe, he can walk, he can run, he can jump, he can double jump, he can triple jump, he can backflip, he can do a high jump if he ducks
well,
first.
In the later games, right? But even in, like, Super Mario Brothers, which is still... arguably one of the best games ever made.
Yeah, I was thinking about Mario 64.
Yeah.
Even in the very first one, there's several
different
ways.
Your palette of moves is relatively limited, and it was still pretty, you know, flipping.
When fantastic. I think of Mario 64, though, obviously the game had advanced a lot, and they added all these different control methods. He could jump off of walls, he could swim, and on top of the things I just mentioned before. And then you get these games that are trying to copy, oh, we've moved into the 3D era, and we want to copy the Mario game that
right,
did so
right.
well, right? And then... this character, all he can do is like run and jump on some walls, and maybe if he gets a special power up, then he can like... I'm thinking of that stupid Acclaim game that you said had a good engine, but the game wasn't that great. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, like he could float a little bit, you know, but he ran around collecting stuff and
well,
climbing
obviously,
up ladders.
Obviously, the game is not simply a sum of the features. You know, it's the way the features are implemented and how they kind of interact, so to speak, with, you know, how the rest of the game works. It's not just a list of what it can do, although a lot of times when people look and compare games, that's what they look at because they have no other means of comparison.
But that's why I think of, like, the control of your character is so vital, because he allows you to enhance how you interact with the rest of the world throughout the whole game.
Right.
I hate a game like Metroid sometimes. You'll get a certain power-up, but it will never be something you'll bother using except in very certain situations. Or there are some games where, like, you can do some special thing, but only in one level.
Right.
And well, then the power is taken away from you.
Well, this is kind of going in a couple... I can see this going in several directions at once.
You're right.
But I'd like to kind of address this in a general way with regards to, like, you know, how come the Me Toos or the copycats are never as good? I think that there's two main reasons for it. The first one is that the people who made the original, who continue to make the original... they usually understand something very, very subtle about the details of why something works that the people who are trying to copy it don't necessarily understand, and oftentimes they just don't understand at all. Because a lot of times, oh, look, this platform action game, Super Mario Brothers, this is real popular. we should just make that kind of game because it's so hot, right? But that's not the essence of the game. That's just the kind of like the superficiality of the appearance of the game.
But you know as well as anyone that there are people who are on teams for companies who are pushing them to put out a game real fast under a tight schedule. They might still be good designers, but they're given this list of parameters that make it impossible for them to produce a great game.
Well, that's another thing. The second part of it...
The copycats have to be quick out the door.
That I wanted to mention is not only do they have to be quick because they're essentially reacting, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, necessarily, they don't have the resources that the people who make the successful original did. I mean, think about it.
They had the time to develop it before the cat was out of the bag, you mean?
Well, no. The people who are making Grand Theft Auto, right, they have... Without having any kind of particular insight or being privy to what exactly is going on, I can confidently say that they have almost unlimited resources, virtually unlimited resources.
But that's only because they've had a popular game in the past.
Right.
Grand Theft Auto 3, you know, nobody knew. That was out of nowhere. Grand Theft Auto 1 and 2 hadn't done that spectacularly.
Right.
So they made an amazing game and didn't have unlimited resources.
Right. Sometimes they do, though. Like God of War, for example, was a project where they had virtually unlimited resources.
Okay.
And that was a one-off. That was not a sequel of something, right? So it's very, very hard to compete on that basis, especially when your game is like a GTA-type game where it's kind of like its shtick or its quality or whatever is judged on the means of how much stuff is crammed in there, you know? The GTA thing is one of sheer volume, and it's hard to compete with that sheer volume.
Well, then...
Unless you have an insane amount of resources.
Yeah, but don't... So why even try to make the copycat game?
Because people who don't understand what good games are really made of aren't smart enough to, or don't want to take the risk of doing something creative and new on their own. You know, I've said this before, and the more that I see the way the industry is going, the clearer it becomes to me that publishers don't really know what makes a game sell. Most people don't know. It's very, very kind of like, it's just like a whimsical thing. It's very hard to predict what will sell. And so they want to try to mitigate their risk by doing like, oh, well, that was just done, and that sold real good, so let's do that. Even though... We're up against all these other hurdles, right? We've got the cards stacked against us. We know that people buy this because they just did. So let's do that.
I'm thinking it's the time constraint that leaves their mind. Like,
well, and there's that, right? They're behind the eight ball to start with. They're trying to catch up to something that's already been done. You know, all these things on top of each other make it really hard.
Yeah, and they don't have like the 3 years to work on it like the original people did because they have to pump it out within a year.
Right.
If it took 3 years, then the sequel to the real game would be out by then.
The other thing, too, is that the company is making so much money, the original developer, that they have the luxury of just saying, you know what, it's going to be done when it's done. You know, people who are trying to catch up, in addition to having to catch up, they have to be like, okay, well, we can't take too long to make this because otherwise we just wasted our time. So there's the time constraint, there's resources constraint, there's the possibility that the people making the game or steering the direction of the game don't really understand the essence of what it is that they're kind of copying or mimicking. You know, I think it's all those things. And that's my story.
All right, well, that's something to chew on, sir. All right, well, we have a couple more minutes before the end of the break, so let's take one of the callers. I know Penn wants to talk to you about the Japanese game developer idea, what we were talking about earlier. Japanese versus American.
Yes, let's hear it.
All right, let's bring on Pen15. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's happening?
I have to totally disagree with what you said about Japanese game developers. The reason
you
that...
You mean how we said Japanese developers don't bloat their games full of crap to slow them down?
Yeah, but that's because they never change their game design. It's the exact same thing for the most part. I mean, aside from...
Okay, well, let's talk about specifics. Let's talk about specifics here.
They certainly make a very varied set of gaming experiences. So what do you mean by they don't change their design?
Well, for example, if you look at a game like Final Fantasy, it took their 12th version to make it somewhat real-time. It's easy to make a game technically amazing if nothing is actually happening on screen.
Well, yeah, but that's a special case because that game is it's a turn-based role-playing game, right? So, like, they're always going to make a turn-based role-playing game because that's what Final Fantasy is.
Nobody told me Final Fantasy XII was real-time, dude. Should I go play that game now?
Well, if you consider the technological breakthroughs that the American side always is making, I prefer someone actually try than to never, to just stick to the formula.
I know what you're getting at with that, and that's, I think that you're making the assumption that if they have the ability to make something real-time, that that's necessarily better than having it being turn-based. Am I wrong?
No, I'm just saying in general, the Japanese game design, they're still using the same formula from 10, 15 years ago and never, ever trying anything new. Maybe the Japanese audience prefers that.
I do not know why you're claiming that. Look at
now you're pissed off a lot. Now look what you've
done. Maybe Katamari is a special example, but Katamari, brand new gameplay experience, new Japanese designers coming along, and they knew, don't make it crazy and advanced with the graphics. We want it to run well.
Let's talk about this after we come back.
It was also developed by college students.
I'm going to put the pen to task.
All right, we'll be right back.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio with Ara.
And Alon.
And that's it, pretty much. So we were talking about Penn, about how much of a racist I am. So let's continue this discussion.
Is it really a concept of racism? Is that what we're getting at here?
It's actually not. I'm just kind of being facetious. It's more kind of like culturalism, I think. But I am being blatantly overgeneralizing.
And we're also saying that they're better than us.
Well, sometimes I like to, you know, pull my skin back on my eyes and pretend I'm Japanese.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Now we can get racist. All right, so sweet. do we have Penn back on the phone here?
Yeah.
All right, so he's basically saying that the Japanese don't really leave their formula, so when it goes from one system to another, great. They have a nice spanking new system that can run all sorts of grand stuff. And I say that, you know, they have a lot of different ideas, and there's no reason for me to think that the only reason things run well is because they never change their tune.
I think that adhering to a formula repeatedly is endemic of just the games business in general everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Okay. But there's still plenty of fine ideas. So you take a new idea, something that's not a sequel or repetition in a series, right? And or like, let's say a driving game. Some new developer decides to make a driving game, right? Our argument is that the Japanese developer will make a game that runs well and perhaps sacrifices the visuals in order to have a good controlling experience in terms of the gameplay, right?
If I had to be a betting man, that's what I would bet.
Yeah. And so,
but I'm not talking about in terms of visuals. I really could care less about visuals. I mean, just like, how many Japanese games do you know have any kind of decent AI? None that I can think of.
What is decent AI to you?
Well, a game like Fear, a game like, just, well, basically, most U.S.-made games consider that behavior that's important to the experience. And
that's because Japanese people are robots and they don't consider emotion.
No, you know what? It's actually a really interesting thing that you brought up, Penn, and I think that it's kind of like a difference in thinking about what is good about a game. For example, you know, a lot of enemies that are in a lot of Japanese games, like let's say some of the Castlevania games, right? And I like to use that example because the enemy patterns in a game like Castlevania are very, very simple. And you could say like, oh, the AI is stupid or whatever, right? But it actually is, not only does it work really well for what it tries to accomplish, but it actually, there's a pattern there that the player can learn from, right? And then they can learn a weakness from the enemy, and they can exploit it. Now, a lot of times, a lot of the attraction, I think, in like so-called, you know, complex or sophisticated AI in a lot of American games is that people see, you know, a lot of times, like in first-person shooters especially, you know, the enemies moving around in certain ways, And they're like, oh, look, that guy was totally ducking what I did, and he was being really smart about it. And the funny thing is that in a lot of these games, even though they're in, like, interviews and press, you'll be like, yeah, you know, we're working on the AI and stuff like that. All of that stuff was just basically, like, a perceptual phenomenon that happens where you think that, like, the enemies are planning something and they're doing something smart, and they're really not. That was really interesting going on back there in the background noise.
Fine, but I turned that off. We shut them off for a minute. But I need you to repeat what you're saying there, because I'm not understanding what you're getting at.
What I'm getting at is that there's all this talk about like AI being like good and smart and complicated and interesting and all this stuff. A lot of it is hooey. It really is. A lot of the time, you think that the AI is planning something or executing a plan when they're really not.
Well, I mean, clearly all the AI in games is triggered by something, right? And it's still all computational.
Right. The thing is, like, the player a lot of times doesn't necessarily have insight into what the algorithm is behind making something work a certain way. You know, and the other thing that I might add is that I don't think it's necessarily good to have an opponent that is going to, you know, outsmart you or outwit you or whatever. I mean, if there's an opponent that's in a game that you can't find something to exploit about them and something that you can't learn about their pattern, then what does that mean? That means that, like, they're outwitting you at every move, and that's not interesting. That's not fun, right? You feel like whatever you do, they find something to, like, come back at you with. If you don't feel like you're making any kind of progress against an opponent, then it's like, you know, what can you do? You kind of feel like you're stuck.
Well, I'm not going to argue for patterns all the time, because I'm fine with AI. But
Well, the point is that there's always a pattern there. You know, sometimes you think that there's something more going on, there isn't. Sometimes there really is something more going on. It's always different, right? It's kind of really hard to tell what exactly is happening without actually talking honestly with the guy who actually developed the game or actually, you know, wrote those routines or whatever. My point is that it's not always best to have smarter AI.
All right. Well, this sort of changed from our original topic as well.
Yeah, but it was interesting.
All right. Well, I would not argue that the Japanese designers are weak, but whatever. Maybe when you have more time next week, Penn can call in and we can expound on this idea a little bit more. We're running out of time, though.
Yeah, and I think we should talk about this next time, so let's definitely try and do that.
I wanted to get from Scott. Both Penn and Scott have been calling us quite frequently lately. I'm happy with that. We have something to talk about. So let's pull Scott on the line here. This is Fopo from our chat room. Feel free to join our chat and call as well. Scott, you're on the air.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
What's happening?
Yeah, I was going to talk about something, but obviously not enough time, so I'll jump in the conversation you guys were having. I think the reason why Americans tend to force graphics and try to push it as much out is because if you look at the people who, like, a lot of the companies are there, Epic, Valve, and id, they seem to either, or and EA, they seem to either make engines or push engines or kind of justify their purchase of an engine. So it's almost like they're trying to push a technology because, it, like, saying it runs at 1080p, that's a number they can market and put on a commercial. When gameplay, obviously, you can, as we read about last week.
I don't want to get in the chicken or egg argument here, but I really think that the fact that they work on engines is a result of them being interested in graphics, not the other way around. Americans, obviously, are really visual. You know, Hollywood seems to be the center of this planet, and it's here in America.
You know, I have such an interesting discussion that'll take about an hour and 4 minutes longer than we have.
So, I mean, I think we have really a concentration on the visual and an appreciation for beauty more than, I mean that's not even true, because other cultures really appreciate beauty too, but we seem to think that it's vital for success. And I think that that's why we have companies like Epic that have focused so much on visuals and build engines.
I think it's a cultural thing. Actually, to kind of encapsulate what I want to spend an hour talking about into maybe a minute, there is this cultural thing with Japanese people playing games where if you go to a Japanese arcade and you watch how people play games, you will consistently see something different from the way Americans play games. And that can be summarized in the Japanese don't continue.
What?
They don't continue. When they finish their quarter and it's game over, they don't put another quarter in most of the time to continue.
I don't understand. Seriously?
Yes.
That's bollocks.
Whereas
dude.
Here, what do? Oh, game over. Oh, I want to see the next stage. I'm going to put another quarter. You know?
We want the easy return.
Well, we just, for Americans, you know, it's like, oh, I just want to see the next thing, right? And a lot of things, especially what has been so good about arcade games that unfortunately have gone defunct here, is that there's an intensity of the experience of overcoming a challenge, right? That if you just put in the next quarter, you completely destroy. You get to see the next thing.
That's the problem with emulating arcade games.
But that's a problem endemic with console games and the direction they're going in as of late, particularly American ones.
All right. Well, obviously we're at the end of the show, so thank you very much for Scott for calling in and introducing this very interesting idea. Stuff I want to talk about more next week.
Yes.
Actually, I guess he was just following up on our concept, but whatever.
We should definitely do that.
Anyway, we'll be back next week to talk more about video games. Feel free to check out chatterboxgameshow.com, and don't forget to go to the website and hit up the rules for that contest that we're having and submit some entries to us, because otherwise I will not have anything to give the good old Bobby Black Wolf.
Sing about how much I'm a racist.
Yes. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your bass are belong to us.